Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast, where we explore life at the intersection of money. Julian.
And I'm Kirsten, and today's episode is sponsored by Hive Wealth. And we are beyond excited to sit down with none other than Yvette Sadler Butler, who is the CEO and founder of Hive Wealth. Now, Yvette's journey is not just impressive, it's a masterclass in how to shape financial institutions with a mix of wisdom and a commitment to just shaking things up. Before she came to Hive Wealth, she spent over 25 years at top financial institutions like Capital One, Silicon Valley Bank, Charles Schwab, Wells Fargo, E-Trade. But what's really impressive is how Yvette and Hive Wealth are pushing the envelope and making finance a space where everyone feels included. So buckle up, we're about to unpack the story and the strategy of one of the most pivotal players in the fintech scene and get into the heart of her vision, the seismic shifts in finance, and how Hive Wealth is rewriting the rule book. So we are so excited to have you. Thank you for joining us, Yvette.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be with you today.
Wonderful. Yeah. So I just want to start at the top because you have over 25 years experience in the financial services industry as a Black woman, a former banking executive turned fintech founder. Just knowing what you know about wealth and how it's built and how it's sustained and how things have changed over time. How did all of that experience change the way that you built Hive Wealth?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's nice to look back every once in a while, especially having been done this for such a good long time. So quickly, I started out right at Wall Street, and then I went to business school. And then that's when my journey into retail financial services really began. I went to a consulting firm at first called McKinsey. And what I learned there is I loved finance and I loved people. The business to business and institutional businesses weren't as exciting to me because I loved helping consumers figure out how to solve problems. And Charles Schwab, right after that, was a perfect place to be there. Because I tell everyone, when I started, we started with the consumer. You looked at problems they were having. So for example, we were all in a room and we were looking at statements. And we said, you know what? Some of these customers aren't individuals. They're serving other clients. And that's how Schwab Institutional was ultimately found. It literally solving a problem. And it's probably half of Schwab at this point, if not more. So I really got excited about that. And when I compared that to my time on Wall Street, it was completely the opposite, right? You have a bunch of computers, you'd model something, and then you'd open the door and say, who are we going to sell this to? So my mind works more from starting with the consumer problem and kind of working my way backwards. And my first loves in school were both finance and technology. I actually like technology more. And I had a summer internship, and my cousin worked at Riggs Bank. It's a bank in Washington, D.C., or at least it was. And I loved it. I was programming all day. I was doing international banking. It was fabulous. There was one problem. It was a little too soon, and the technology group was in the basement. And I was like, you don't put baby in the basement. So I went to Wall Street. But if that hadn't been the case, you know, if I'd been 4 or 5 years later, as you know, technology became central and core to everything we do, and it still is today. So it's just so interesting, you know, having started with such a passion for technology. So most of my career over that span has been at that intersection of wealth management and technology. And that is really that journey across 8 banks ultimately led me to Hive Wealth.
I love that. I want to ask a question because, you know, we spend a lot of time talking with change makers like yourself, and oftentimes there's a moment in their life where something clicked or something changed. And I'm wondering if that is also true with you. Was there something that happened or a moment in your life, a story or something like that, that led you to start Hive Wealth?
That's such a great question. And I would say it's not a moment. It was a pattern that I ultimately recognized over the course of my career. So we're talking a little bit more about what it's like to be an African-American woman in corporate America. So on paper, as we all do, I had all the credentials, right? I went to Stanford, I worked at McKinsey, et cetera. But what would happen over the course and the pattern I eventually figured out is that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, right? I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur ultimately. But I always wanted to take the small business with potential and see if I could grow it. And it was always focused on this one question. How do we make our bank relevant and our wealth management platform relevant to the next gen? But once, you know, you dug in and you found that diamond in the rough and you buffed it off and it was shining and gleaming, that was the perfect opportunity to give it to the white man. So between bank 7 and bank 8. So I didn't really have aspirations to the C-suite. I got there anyway. And then by the time, and it shouldn't take 8 banks, but it did. And I hope for this next generation, it's not like that. But once I got there, I was like, I don't even really want to be here. I want to be an entrepreneur. But once I buffed up the diamond, again, always was given away. So between bank 7 and 8, I thought I had retired from banking. So I started Hive Wealth and I said, I want to start with a clean piece of paper. Like if I, a Black woman, was to imagine what money would be, what would I create? And I ended up going to an 8th bank, but I kept Hive Wealth. But it's a whole bunch of things. Number one, I think we've been sold a bill of goods that money is this shameful, solitary journey in life. And you can't talk about it, you can't mention it, and you have to just go figure it out. Well, all that does is it maintains the status quo. So what is most fundamental is Hive Wealth was founded on that Maya Angelou quote that says, if you know better, you do better, right? We all have our jobs, our lives, and not everybody obsesses about how money works like those of us that are in the industry. So Hive was about, first of all, we don't want to do it alone. Let's create communities. Let's grow our wealth together. Let's talk about everything, all the money secrets, all the money mistakes, all the money wins, because that's how we're going to create generational wealth. So Hive Wealth is basically built on three principles: community, as I mentioned, and we have three hives. We have professionals, gig workers, and entrepreneurs. Context, really understanding. Let's take a statistic that comes out every year. So every year they tell us the average 401k is $120,000. That means nothing to no one. But if you're in a group of people where they're very similar to you, similar life stage, similar career, if we tell you your hive on average has 80,000 in your 401k at this point, and you happen to have 120, now that makes much more sense and gives you the data to make good decisions. And then the last piece is content. So working with you, for example, to educate people and to remove the shame, get some answers, and communicate to people that it's never too late to start.
I love that. I love that. It's so important because even the way you feel about your money is context dependent. There are people who make hundreds of millions of dollars that don't feel like they have any, and there are people that make tens of thousands of dollars that feel like they're the richest people in the world. And so being able to get your financial news and advice and even your milestones in a context dependent way is a really powerful tool. That to me is the promise of fintech, is the ability to deliver that stuff the way that you need it in order to feel confident in the moves that you've already made and the ones that you're going to make next.
Absolutely. And another part of kind of behavioral finance is people don't want to feel like it's competition. It's not context for competition's sake, it's context for collaboration and support. And when you hit a milestone or take that next step in your financial plan, to be able to come back and the confetti is going and the hive is clapping for you, inspire someone else in the hive to say, let me get that done too. Because that's really the big problem with generational wealth building is actually inertia. You just get overwhelmed and you shut down. And so being in a community and not being alone is really powerful. The other thing too is it kind of completes the circle, right? What generational wealth is about is not just our lifetimes, but the next life and the next life and the next life, not always having to start in the dugout, as we talk about so much, right? And what's so powerful about it is you can also invest together, right? And you can invest in businesses together. And there have been communities that have done these things forever. And we haven't, as a people, tapped into that. So I really love the fact that it kind of self-generates beyond just the individual.
I love that point. It's a strong point because it's Black History Month. And as you know, the S&P 500 is coming off of a wave of record highs. And we also know that according to the Wall Street Journal, young Black investors are the leading group of new investors in the stock market. How does that make you feel after all of your experience and even just your mission with Hive Wealth?
Saw that article, I think it was a Wall Street Journal article, and was so excited. And I've been blasting it to all my friends, and somehow they're not quite as excited as I am.
I know, isn't that weird?
But
We just did a whole podcast where we were like, this is revolutionary
oh my
and
goodness.
historic and a major, and everybody's just like, I mean, right?
I have to tell you, to see that statistic is really exciting and compelling. And what it was that 40% of the new stock investors are Black and African American. 40%. I mean, that's well over-indexed our portion of the population. It's fabulous. Yeah. And it's a trend. It's a part of one of the many trends that Hive Wealth was founded on, is that this next generation is all not talking about just a job or not talking. They all have gigs, which is great, or side jobs, which is, I think, a wonderful way, by the way, to be an entrepreneur. You know, have it as a side gig as long as you can before you commit to it. And I think the language is just changing. I don't know if you guys saw Issa Rae show, and, you know, she's talking about how she might go independent, but that's a whole other story, which was filmed here in L.A. And the people on it were my kids' age. So I was like, let me learn how they are. But what struck me is when they talked about what they were working on and their money, they were talking about legacy. Yes. That's not a word that came out of any of our mouths when I was their age. And that's what generational wealth is already thinking, okay, yes, this is what I'm doing today, but what's my plan to create not just a job, not just a budget and cover my expenses, but a legacy? Like, what's going to be my impact on the world? And that's what is so another reason why I think generational wealth is so powerful, because if you have that kind of wealth, you can also give to the things you care about and make sure those are sustained in the community, whether you care about tuition payments coming down, or you care about affordable housing, or, you know, whatever it is. What are those things called in our Black communities where there's not enough grocery stores, right?
Like food desert.
Food deserts.
Thank you. Yeah. Whatever you care about, you can have a huge impact. That's really what gets me excited, that if you're thinking about those bigger issues and you start now planning for that legacy, you have a ripple effect beyond your family, which is ultimately, I think, the goal.
Kind of taking the words right out of our mouths. We say those things all the time. I want to stay on the subject of, I guess, television and media or content. You are on record for saying you want to make financial planning more sexy. And so I have to ask, what is unsexy about the way that the conversation is being had now?
It's so funny. For the course of my career, I've kind of been on this financial planning crusade, and I have called it trying to feed broccoli to, you know, our customers. I've put cheese on it. I've put salt and pepper and Lowry's on it. I've put, you know, sugar on it. Nobody wants the broccoli, and that's financial planning. And, you know, the interesting fact that I always want to come back to the data, that context, is that people with a financial plan have 3 times the net worth of people without a financial plan. But the way it's delivered in one of 2 forms. Number one, it's a big book that tells you all the stuff that you haven't done yet, you know, kind of the guilt track. And it's so overwhelming. And, or remember, sometimes there'd be a little online calculator and it was $8 million to retire. Well, I'm never going to have $8 million, so I'm going to spend it all. So it's just so overwhelming, you do nothing. That's problem number one. But the main problem, the reason it's not pervasive, is that financial institutions usually just use it to sell you something. It's not holistic. It's about getting you in a product. So there's lots of great retirement calculators, for example, on sites that don't give you an $8 million answer, you know, give you a reasonable answer based on where you are. But that's in service to try to sell you a mutual fund or an ETF or a target date fund, which is very popular. There's nothing wrong with that per se. It's helping you on that plan and it's giving you a solution, but it doesn't handle everything in your life. So that's what we're trying to do. We think if you make it use AI, but make it bite-sized, right? Understands where you are on the journey and just talks about, here's the next thing you should do. And then, you know, asks every once in a while, did you do it? Did you do it? I'll give you an example. We have a referral to a will and trust platform, and it's available in all 50 states. The same will and trust I paid $5,000 for in 2018, I paid $500 for. And it, you know, I kept getting emails around, did you get it notarized? The joke, or it's not the joke, but the insight is, you know, Aretha Franklin passed. Mm-hmm. She had one will in the cupboard and one will in the couch. And so they had to pay a lot of attorneys and go through a whole the court system, decide, well, is it the cupboard or the couch is the real will? And if you're, you know, holding on to your seat, it was the couch will won. But the lawyers won, right? Those are two people. But if you had a will and it was, you know, notarized, you don't spend any time in probate and your money goes where you intended it to go. So that's what we mean about financial planning. It's so important, but it hasn't been sexy all of this time. So that making it bite size and celebrating you when you get it done. And then, you know, when you're ready, we're like, okay, so now the next thing you need to do, what's the next step? So you don't, again, end up in inertia and just say, forget it, I'm not doing anything.
I love it. We're definitely going to get into AI in just a second, but I want to talk a little bit more about the Hive Wealth experience at different stages. And I know everybody who used and loved Mint, the budgeting app, is not a beginner, but a lot of beginners used Mint to stay on track with their budgets. And now that's no longer an option. Does Hive Wealth have anything that helps people stay on track with their budgets, specifically for beginners?
Yes. So I want to talk about that, but again, with context, let's start with Mint. It's a prime example of what I just described. Mm-hmm. Intuit had Mint as an upper funnel acquisition experience to get you into TurboTax. Mm-hmm. Exactly what I'm saying about financial planning. Yep. Yes, you can get a financial planning retirement calculator, but it's trying to sell you a mutual fund. Again, nothing wrong with that. And they figured out over time, they ultimately bought Credit Karma, and Credit Karma has a lot more customers than Mint. So they don't need it anymore, even though it was a tool that so many people were using. And in fact, Hive Wealth is specifically for next gen savers. So when people used to ask me the budgeting question, I said, hey, use Mint. Because when you're reimagining the financial services industry, it doesn't make sense to build something where there's already a great tool in place. So that has led us to have to rethink, well, Mint is going away or has gone away. Now people still need a budget before they can start saving. So we will incorporate, there's nothing in our app now for that, for the reason, again, that we were telling people to use Mint. But my thinking is, how would we reimagine it now that we do have to cover that need? And one of our next items as we go through the course of the year is to add in your transactions. And so the beauty of AI that we're building up to talking more about is that we can recommend a budget versus the way Mint did it, where it was just the math. Yeah. And then you had to kind of figure out, well, what does that mean? Or how do I create more savings or et cetera? So that's the beauty of AI. So now that we have to cover that need, our AI agent is called B. And so within B, there is a cash module, but obviously we're going to have to do something much more extensive.
Love it. Is it spelled B-E-E or B-E-Y? B-E-E,
yes.
Had to ask for all the Beyonce fans out there, because I know they're like, wait a minute.
Yes. Well, funny fact, Beyonce and I were born on the same day in Houston, Texas. So hopefully fine. But it is B-E-E. It's not B-E-Y.
Well, see, that's why I like you. I'm a Houston girl, too.
I want to stick with this a little bit. So let's start talking a little bit more about the Hive Wealth experience. And so you started talking about artificial intelligence. It's all the rage these days. Can you tell us a little bit more about how AI is incorporated into the Hive Wealth experience?
Yes, absolutely. So within Hive Wealth is B, as we talked about. And for example, there's already, I think, a couple of personal assistants that are built with AI or built that way. So, for example, you would be able to say, I want to go to the Caribbean, and your personal assistant would come back and say, here's 10 trips, you know, that we've created for you. And you say, I like trip 4. And then you say, book it, right? And then they book the airline, they book the hotel, they book your reservations, your excursions, everything. That's where everything is headed, how you interact with your home, how you interact with life. So if financial planning is so important in generational wealth building, we feel like we have the first AI financial planner. So right now you can type in what's next for me. And based on the data that we have so far about you, we can tell you what's next. Mine was do a new will because I was divorced. And so you have to change everything. But that's what we're doing with B now. So the other part of Hive Wealth isn't just the recommendations from B or from one of our calculators, or you see some great content on your show and you're like, I want to do that. We don't think that's enough because it's too easy to not do it. And so we have a marketplace as well. So right now, wills and trusts are in there. Next, we're going to put term insurance, long-term disability. And our goal is, think about something like Uber. Like the very rich love having a driver, take them from point to point to point. So Uber creates an app, so all of us have access to it. That's exactly what Hive Wealth is. Very rich, talk about money all the time. They have a family office who, no matter what they need, they'll do the research and they'll get it done. They'll give them really great asset allocation advice. They'll find really efficient product. So what we're trying to do is democratize all that and give the next gen saver who's willing to get a lot of their advice from AI and social and their peers an ability to actually execute it. And the beauty of it is once we have the marketplace more and more integrated, we'll know that you got it done. So we'll check it off for you. And then we can proactively not wait for you to say, we'll be what's next. We can be like, hello, it's time to do your taxes. So we don't want to just give advice. We want to help them get the work done.
That's just like music to my ears, because as I'm listening to you describe all of the features, I'm thinking about the busy professional who is our target audience. It's, you know, a mom who is juggling a busy job with kids or with other responsibilities. It's the dad who just doesn't want to do another thing, or just a person who's just tired. Like they're just tired. And so to hear how you've leveraged AI to help take some of that lift off of their shoulders, it just sounds like a really easy no-brainer. It sounds like it solves multiple problems where if you were using one app, but you know that you have this thing in the back of your head that you need to do that the app doesn't offer, it kind of eases that friction between you and action because it's right there in the app and it's recommended to you based on the context of where you are in your journey. It's not just like, you know, thrown at you because that's the next logical step that everybody else does.
Yes. Yes. That's how a lot of financial services is built. It's they have algorithms around next most logical product, which isn't terrible, but this is much more personalized to your point. It's, you know, taking 30 years and seeing all the problems that arise and how the rich were just getting richer and richer and richer.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm very passionate about is you don't close wealth gaps for, and not just racial. We're also working on generational wealth gaps because they're, you know, burdened with college debt and gender wealth gaps because women still make less than men. But you can't close those gaps by just doing the things that were done before the traditional way, because that's not a way to close gap. You have to leapfrog into the future. And that's what's so exciting about where we are today, that AI can allow us to leapfrog. AI and the technology is robust enough where we can mimic a family office, something you didn't even know. It's like an iPad, and you didn't know you needed an iPad till you had an iPad.
Right.
Running around thinking, I need a family office. But we're able to deliver that, something that you didn't even know you needed.
Yes.
I'm curious, along those lines, what's been the reaction? This seems like a very forward-thinking financial planning experience. What's been the reaction? Have people been overwhelmed, intimidated, intrigued, a combination of all of the above?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A couple of things that we learned. Number one, we spent a lot of time way back in, I think it was 2019, working on a little alpha product to get feedback on. And we were obsessed with it being anonymous. Like everybody was like, oh, social media has gotten so mean and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. Well, all of that went away in COVID. People were like, I'm sitting in my house. As long as I trust you, I want to interact with people. I don't need to be anonymous. As long as you're not selling my data, I'm good. So that was one big learning. Then we worked with you on some long form content because we were very focused on financial literacy and financial education. Well, our target customer, you know, kind of Gen X and below, has no interest in long form content. So it took us a long time to figure out. The content in the Hive Wealth app is just bite size. It's more like TikTok, a little longer than TikTok, but more similar to that. Because millennials, for example, their number one place they get financial advice is TikTok. And if you think about it, the behavioral finance of it is no different than it has been my whole career. The number one place people want to get, you know, financial information is from friends and family. So what Hive Wealth is giving you friends and family, giving you money peers, so that you get that same experience, because that's just human nature. You want to get content, you want to get information from people you trust. But I don't know, it was like me, I didn't grow up talking about money. My parents were teachers and professors. So how are you going to get the same information that people who grew up very wealthy get? And that is what we're trying to do, is to make sure all that information is available so you know it and you can act on it.
That's been one of the hardest lessons that we've learned, is that our friends and family, as supportive as they are, may not be our community and our financial journeys. You may have to find those people other places. And the internet and technology makes finding like-minded people so much easier. And that helps so much when you are at those crossroads where you had a plan and something went wrong, or you had a plan and something went right. Sometimes the scariest thing is an answered prayer. And so you need that community to be like, oh my gosh, now I have all this money and I can actually start doing these things. What should I know in advance? So that's exciting that there is such a community feature in the app.
Yes. And you know, a time when it really struck me how important that was is when we had the mortgage crisis in what, 2009 or so. I had friends who lost their homes, and it wasn't really their fault. They were still working. They were just sold a house that, you know, started doing crazy stuff. Like, they had negative amortizing loans. So every month you could pay whatever you wanted, and it was just getting added to principal. And then the rate shot up. Of course you couldn't afford it. So there was no shame in it, but people felt so ashamed.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to find a community of people to say, it's not your fault, and it doesn't even matter if it was your fault. Let's figure out what we can do today to fix this. It's not the end of the world. So just having a place to go to have conversations, I think, is so, so important.
The word shame has come up quite a bit, and I'm curious as to why. Is this because you know that there are popular voices in the personal finance space that oftentimes lead with shame? Or is it because, having had these many conversations with members of the Hive, you recognize that shame is one of those elements that continues to come up and ends up becoming an obstacle for them to overcome? Or is it a little bit of both?
I think it is. That's the main message that we heard over and over again from two populations, not necessarily from millennials. It was more from women and from racial minorities who just didn't grow up talking about money. And I think it really is meant to hold us down, right? That, you know, you don't have the capacity to understand. Women are actually better investors than men.
It's sure are.
More patient, more disciplined to the plan. But you don't know that. Another thing I saw in my career, I think the number was something like 80%, and women live longer, 80% of widows change their financial advisor because they'd been ignoring them for 40, 50 years.
And you think, that actually makes sense.
Right, you think, I'm sticking around here? No. Right. So it's just something that's come up over and over and over again, and it's actually against the data. And again, that leads to my excitement we were talking about before, with 40% of the new stock investors are African American. Boy, that changes the dialogue, that we're not interested. Or, you know, oh my, the favorite one is that we don't have patience. What's the word? Delayed gratification. That's if we do happen to get the money, we want to spend it and get a fancy car and fancy labels and fancy houses and all of that. The truth is that for an equally educated African-American family doing equal work and maybe even getting equal pay, there's a lot more pulls on the African-American money, because you got, you know, cousin needs help with his, you know, school fees this month, and, you know, mom yep. needs help with her house, or there's more pulls on that money. It's not because we're not interested or we're not good at money. We have more obligations on that money. And that explains the wealth gap in like circumstances. So, and there's the shame that if you're the one in the family that's kind of made it, you feel ashamed if you don't help. And so talking about how you handle that and make sure that you're putting your mask on first, because if you don't take care of your retirement and your home and your needs first before you start giving it all out, you're not going to be there to help all these people that need the help. So it just came over and over and over again, and it kind of gets my ire up where people make conclusions because the wealth gap is where it is. I mean, the most important one is most of that wealth in the U.S. was created by housing.
Yep.
We were redlined out of the appreciating neighborhoods. So even the original, or Tulsa, where it was just taken from us, even
That's right.
you know, once we started to put it together. So, and then You're going to say, oh, look, you know, why is your wealth so, it must be for these other reasons that just aren't true. So that's really been the passion of my career. And I think I've been just collecting data points along the way.
You've given several examples of how you use those data points, not just to educate other people, but to shape the pipeline of the app, to shape the future updates, to shape the things that you offer to the people in the Hive. It sounds like you're not only just learning this and using it to improve the app, you're also sharing it with people, sharing it with members to normalize some of their experiences. Has there been any surprises from people using the app that have led to updates that you didn't plan on? Have they used it in really surprising ways, or has it kind of been intuitive on what you know to be true about the way that we manage our money?
Yeah, I think the place where we still have not cracked the code, it's really tough, the chicken and egg of engagement versus advice versus getting people to take action. It having a plan, let's talk about investments. We haven't talked about that as much yet. Number one, my core philosophy is don't overpay to underperform, which means your core portfolio should primarily be in passively managed vehicles. Because active managers, 80% of the time, don't beat their benchmark anyway. So why play that game? The investment part of it is also kind of core to getting to where you want to get to. But it's just so hard to read all these tea leaves all the time. Someone, I saw a comment on social media today. They said, I don't know, I have $150,000, I think, in a fund for retirement or something like that. Should I come out and wait for the recession when the market crashes? And I'm thinking, 80% of money managers who spend all day trying to figure out these things don't get it done.
Right.
And you think you're going to be able to perfectly time when to jump back into the market.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Based on vibes.
Yeah. It's like, it reminds me of the Whoopi and Ghost, right? I'm going to throw a card and they're going to tell me when to go back. So you need to just be regularly investing, you know, dollar cost averaging, which I know you talk about. You put X amount in on X date every month, and sometimes you're going to overpay and sometimes you're going to underpay. But on average, you're going to get a good price, and what the market does, the market does. So, and that's back to the sexy thing. That's not as sexy as my cousin.
I was just about to say that.
I want to do crypto. I'm like, do you know how it works? Nope, no idea. And I'm like, but it's hot. I'm like, yeah, I know it's hot. But if you don't know how it works, don't invest in it. That's the Warren Buffett rule. And then, you know, these following these trends, some people make some money, but most people don't. So just all of those things are hard to read. So that's why I keep saying financial planning is not sexy, but that's how you're going to get to your goals of generation wealth.
Yeah, cracking that nut around average and not being afraid of it. It's one of the core parts of our job is just teaching high performing people, high achievers, that this is the one place where you can be average and still satisfied with the result. You can be completely average in your investing strategy and still come out wealthy enough to have more than enough to support the causes that you care about, the family members, the friends, all of those things. But there's something about that word that people are just like, yeah, how do I be just like a little more than average? I don't want to be average. So that in and of itself, just the language around it is a hurdle.
That's right. And there's two things you can control, you know, being disciplined, average cost averaging into the market and not worrying about the ups and downs, and taxes.
Yeah.
There are tax strategies that you can do that put more money in your pocket to invest. They're all, you know, you have to use a tax advisor and all of those things, but even knowing to go research them. So for example, if you're a startup owner like myself, there's a qualified small business exemption that has a bunch of rules, but if you follow them, you can actually pay almost nothing in taxes when you take money out, as long as it's been in there for 5 years. And it's, you know, under a certain amount in capitalization. So I just say that to say there's lots of things like that, that you can get educated about that will change your bottom line. But, you know, the gimmick of the day might feel good. And you know what? If it's really important to you and you take a little bit of money and on Robinhood, you invest in it because you feel like you've researched it enough to know who you're buying and what part of the market you're sitting in or what part of the value chain. That's what's so important. Like, what part of the value chain are you sitting in? If you understand that and you want to put a little bit of money, nothing wrong with that. Because I think you get
Right.
smarter by investing in stocks individually.
Yeah, this is such a big conversation, and I'm trying my best to stay focused because,
I'm not.
well,
I'm just kidding.
I'm almost empathetic for people like you that are so passionate about it, and we are too. But you know, I think you are genuinely trying to solve this problem, and in our experience, it can be very overwhelming because you start to understand that it gets into the psychology of investors. We start talking about their ability to embrace risk, their confidence levels, not just in the market, but also in their skill sets and their abilities to earn income going forward. It's such a big conversation. And I'm going to ask you a question that we genuinely hate being asked, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because there's everyone wants to believe that there's one button, one easy thing, one thing, right? I don't believe there's any one thing, but I'm going to force you to pick anyway. If there was one conversation that you think we as a community should be having right now in this moment with respect to financial planning, what would it be?
I feel that in some ways we've got this three steps forward, two steps back, or even sometimes four steps back happening in our community right now. And that's because you don't have the emergency fund in the first place. So there are lots of people who aren't running out and, you know, overspending on, you know, material things. If something's really important, you've been saving for it your whole life, go get it. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to shame anybody. But what happens is an emergency comes up, like a health emergency, or you lose a job and your kid's still in college, and you got to pay that tuition. You're going to make sure that's what's going to happen. What we do is we raid their 401k, or we sell our stocks because you're like, oh, I was just playing with that anyway, and that brings us back. Now, if you had your 6 months of living expenses saved in a high yield savings account, or you know, you could split it between, you know, CD and high yield savings, however your strategy works out, it needs to be accessible for the most part, then you wouldn't have to take back your progress. And so that's the main thing. And then taking that money out of the 401k seems okay. Now, if you're doing it from a loan from work and you're paying yourself back, it actually isn't that bad. But if you're just taking it out, it's got tons of penalties. And even in that strategy where you know, it's really set you back. So all that progress. And the other key thing that we haven't talked about is the earlier you start, especially in your 401k and your IRAs, the compounding interest create that over a long career by definition makes you a millionaire by the time you're my age. So doing these little things and then having a cushion so you don't have to take back your progress is probably the most important thing for us to change.
Why do you
And then
think?
if a cousin or somebody needs money and only way you can give it to them is to raid your 401k, the answer is no, you can't do
Period. Full stop.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're one of the first founders, banking executives, financial services professionals who has this mix of lived experience and expertise, financial expertise, technical expertise that created a product that addresses both. Usually people hide one aspect of it or don't build it in for the purposes of scalability or addressable audience, whatever metric they're looking for. And it's really refreshing to hear the way that you talk, the stories that you tell, the examples, because you know that you're living it. You're not above your product or above the mission of your product. And that's just really refreshing. I think our audience is going to pick up on that. I mean, I'm picking up on it, so I know that they will.
Well, I mean, we're all in the same boat. We're either one or two generations from people who were just making it. You know, my grandparents had a farm. My dad got a PhD on the GI Bill. You know, it's not because his parents paid for it or anything like that. So even if you're a corporate executive or the busy professionals that you target, we all know people who are struggling. All of us, we're very close to it. And then, you know, just being in the room, and I think that's why God put me in those rooms. I was like, oh, you know, and I would write them down. So I have a whole book of oohs that I want to get out to people because we can use them too.
Sure can. Everybody can use a ooh. Exactly. All right. So I know that you mentioned there are three different personas within the app. There are the gig workers or part-time workers, there's professionals, and then there's small business owners and entrepreneurs. How does the path for each of those differ?
So the way B works is it takes you on a journey dependent on which, you know, which cohort you're in. So let's take an example. If you're a professional, one of the first things B is going to tell you after the cash module is max out your 401k, because that's, you know, especially at least get it to the company match. I think you should max it out, but because that's free money. And again, that's going to compound. But a gig worker doesn't have a 401k usually by definition. So it's going to say, if you can, or it's even a side gig, you can open a SEP IRA and the max is something like $60,000 a year. It's an incredible amount of money you can sock away. And as long as that money that you sock away is coming from your gig and not from your job where you have a 401k, then you're good. And you get the beauty of, if you put it on the right platform, you can trade in it if that's what you want to do. And you can be a little bit more long-term with that money. So the experiences are context sensitive, right? And making sure, you know, I think many people haven't even heard of a SEP IRA, right? There's a lot of energy right now around custodial accounts. So if you're in any of the hives and you have kids, we'll talk about, you know, how do you set up a custodial account and what's the max and what can you put it in and what can't you? So, and then our next cut is take those three verticals and break them into three early stage career, mid stage career, and late career. So the context will get even tighter. And then as we sign partnerships, let's say doctors want to come in as a group into Hive, then obviously we will create doctor's advice that they have access to certain things that, you know, you might not have somewhere else. So that's the whole point. It's on, you know, that's the way you can get personal advice without interacting with a person. And again, without AI, none of this is possible. So I've kind of been waiting my whole career for this opportunity.
That sounds amazing. I love this. I don't want to be pessimistic, but we have similar conversations with people. We're trying to help them. We're trying to get them over the hump. And we realize that all roads for a significant percentage of them lead to this point of frustration where they feel almost tied. They don't know what to do because at the end of the day, they make a lot of money, but they may have a child and they're also financially supporting a parent. And it just kind of makes them set the idea of investing and even thinking about their own future and put it on the back burner. How does Hive Wealth help people overcome that obstacle?
Yes, my favorite question, because I'm living it right now. Both my parents are 91 and I have 20-year-olds, three 20-year-olds. And I find it to be the hardest. When they're younger, you can structure and you can solve. When they're 20, you're trying to help them figure out how to solve it for themselves. And you can't jump in and do what you used to do. So it's very difficult. And I think community is so important. That's why talking to people is so critical, because you don't have to make all the mistakes. You don't have to make all the mistakes with money. You don't have to make all the mistakes with how to manage your kind of sandwich situation. And that's the point of talking. It's not showing off. It's not any of those things. It's really trying to get information and make better decisions. And so I remember when I called a friend who had been kind of a couple of years ahead of me, and she said what, you know, something I said earlier, and that really opened it up. I thought I was helping people. I was actually hurting them. Mm-hmm. Because not only are you not teaching them how to be resilient? I mean, these are the kids where, you know, we did all their play dates and, you know, we took them from pillar to post, whereas I grew up where, you know, the light could get home before the lights, you know, turn off, right? Or turn on, excuse me, and figure it out, right? And so we were trying to do better, but instead we were just, you know, teaching them to wait for solutions to show up. And one thing she said just really struck me, and that is, again, it might make you feel better doing what you're doing, but you're hurting them. And that was so eye-opening for me. So it's, and you've got to let them fail. And especially if you're also caring for your parents, you can shift over there because you can't let them fail. Like if they need something, you just gotta, do your best to help them get it straight. So that's how I've been managing it. You can't keep doing what you were doing before because, again, this is the story I used to tell all the time in my corporate career when you talk about work-life balance. Ultimately, I think the goal is integration, and that's why I'm so excited about Hivewealth because what I'm passionate about is what I do every day. So it's fun to get to this. But when you're juggling, think of every, don't worry about balance. Think of, get up in the morning and say, today I'm juggling two rubber balls and one glass ball. And the glass ball one day might be the kid has an 11 o'clock, parade. I don't know, they're always at 11 a.m. Or the glass ball might be you have a board presentation. So get up that day and make sure the glass ball doesn't break. And that's how I got through my whole life. So with the sandwich generation, as I'm just describing, the 20-year-olds need to start figuring it out. And it's okay to fail. It's actually good for them to fail a little bit and some kind of control, not an epic failure, but some level of failure helps them learn. And right now, the glass ball are my parents. So if that helps anyone, I hope it does. It really helped me juggle.
Love it.
Yvette, thank you so much for chatting with us today about your journey, your career, your passion, but also about Hivewealth. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.